Gary Glass joins me this week to talk about the state of homebrewing, American Homebrewers Association, and the upcoming 2016 HomebrewCon in Baltimore. This is Beersmith episode number 123.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Hello, everybody. This is Beersmith episode number 123, and it's late March 2016. Gary Glass, the director of the American Homebrewers Association, joins me this week to discuss all things homebrewing. Thank you to this week's sponsor, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Are you ready for a brewing experience of a lifetime? I'll be teaching a few seminars at the Craft Beer and Brewing Brewers Retreat at Devil's Thumb Ranch in Colorado this fall. I hope you'll be able to join me. Craft Beer and Brewing is now offering two stunning brewing retreats. Check out all the amazing retreats at brewersretreat.com. And also Anvil, amazing kettles, burners, and accessories to help you forge the perfect beer. Anvil is a new line of brewing equipment from Blickman Engineering and endorsed by brewing author John Palmer. Anvil is durable, reliable, a quality line of brewing equipment that's built to last. Find out more about Anvil at anvilbrewing.com. Again, that's anvilbrewing.com. And also Beersmith Mobile at beersmith.com/mobile. Create, edit, and brew your recipes from your phone or tablet, and share or find new recipes from tens of thousands of recipes on the Beersmith Cloud. Beersmith Mobile is available on iTunes, Google Play, or the Amazon app stores. Give Beersmith Mobile a try today. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Gary Glass. He's the director of the American Homebrewers Association. He joins me to talk about the AHA, the state of homebrewing, and the upcoming HomebrewCon, scheduled for June 9th through 11th in Baltimore, Maryland. Gary heads up the 40-plus thousand-member Homebrewers Association and is also active in the Brewers Association parent organization. Gary, it is fantastic to have you back on the show.
Always great to be with you. Thanks, Brad.
So how are you doing today? I saw it was snowing there in Colorado.
It is snowing, and it's March here, and we're supposed to get lots of snow, and this is the first snow we've gotten, so I can't complain.
Well, Gary, it's been about a year since we had you on the show last. I was wondering, what is new with the AHA?
Well, one thing that's new is we got new digs. We just, about 3 weeks ago, moved into a new office space because after a year and a half of being in the Brewers Association's new building, we outgrew that space. And so we took the whole AHA division, moved into a new space, and now we've got our very own home, the world headquarters for the Homebrewers Association, which is kind of exciting because we can be brewing more often and not interrupting our colleagues.
So the world headquarters now?
World headquarters, yeah.
Are you in a separate building from the Brewers Association now, or are you all together?
It is a separate building, but we're just two blocks away from the main building, so it's a short walk.
But you got some room to brew, right?
We got more room to brew, and we got more parking spaces, which is totally awesome.
Awesome.
You know, some things are important, you know?
Parking does matter.
Okay, parking in downtown Boulder matters.
Well, I thought I'd start with a discussion of the big picture in homebrewing. Tell me some of the changes that are going on in the homebrewing industry now.
One of the cool things that we've noticed in the last few years is that we're seeing some demographic shift that's been going on. Seeing a lot more young people get into the hobby, and currently there are more millennials represented in the hobby than any other generation, which means that the homebrewers in general are actually much younger than what we had seen in previous years. So I think that's very promising. And, you know, we've still got a ways to go before the millennials start turning 21. So I think we're going to continue to see growth within the hobby because of that, that shift to a younger generation. So great to see younger people grabbing onto the hobby. Also seeing a lot more women and other non-bearded white males getting into homebrewing, which is also a very good thing. Cause
some of them have goatees, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, facial hair is kind of important. You're kind of disappointing me, Brad, but
yeah, I'm not a traditional, I guess.
No, you don't fit the stereotype, dude.
Nope. But that's great. I mean, so we're seeing a lot of new people enter the homebrewing market, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's absolutely a good thing because, you know, getting new people like just brings a little bit more vitality to homebrewing. So, yeah, definitely a good thing.
And, hopefully some of those folks will make it a lifetime thing, right?
That's certainly our hope because, you know, we want people to be members for as long as possible.
Now, one of the other changes we're seeing from what I understand, is we're seeing more people dive into all grain, right?
Yeah, that's a big trend right now. It's, you know, and it's something that's been building for quite a while. But you know, I think largely due to the amount of information that's now available to homebrewers through, you know, podcasts like yours and websites like homebrewersassociation.org, people are learning how to advance within the hobby much faster than they ever have before. So that you know, we're now seeing you know, people. Either just doing an extract batch or two to get started and then jumping into all grain or bypassing that entirely. So that's actually does have some, you know, obviously that's a great thing to see homebrewers advancing within the hobby and exploring as much as what the hobby has to offer. But there's some downsides to it as well that we've been seeing. And, one of those is that all grain brewing takes more time than extract brewing. Mm-hmm. And so when you have, you know, people who are advancing within the hobby and getting to that all grain stage and thinking like that's the ultimate way to brew beer. And that's the only way they want to brew beer. If, you know, something changes in their life, like maybe they have kids or get married or a new job, that can affect their, you know, how frequently they can brew. Because if they're having to commit, you know, 6-8 hours to a brew, you know, finding that time might be more challenging. And so I think that's one of the things, one of the negative results we've seen is that people are not brewing as frequently as they were previously.
So obviously some of these people go through life changes too. They get married, they have kids, as you mentioned, and they may be out of the hobby for a few years, but a lot of them will come back later on too, right?
Right. Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, people will, you know, certainly, you know, depending on life circumstances, might lose interest in the hobby or not be able to participate as frequently, but we'll get back into it.
Now, last year, the industry survey, I think we were getting really close, if not over the edge, of actually having a majority all grain brewers. Is that still the case? Have we actually crossed the line yet? Because for many years, it was like 70% extract, right?
Right. So it's a little hard to tell because the way we ask the question is, you know, how frequently or the way we ask the question is of beer ingredient sales, what percentage are for all grain batches? And in the last 2 years, the median has been 50%. Mm-hmm. But that also begs the question, if people who are all grain brewing are then tending to brew less frequently, that might be a driving factor into the number of sales of ingredients for extract. So it might be even, you know, I think we might be even seeing more all grain brewers out there, but they're not necessarily brewing as frequently.
So Gary, as we've seen this shift from extract to all grain, are we seeing a change in quality of the beer?
You know, I think we're seeing an overall quality of homebrew increasing, but I don't think that there's really a quality issue between all grain and extract. With the quality of extracts that are available today, you can make just as good a beer with extracts as you can with all grain. Maybe not as much flexibility in recipe formulation, but just as high a quality. And a good example of that was just recently at the Pacific Northwest Homebrewers Conference. There was a homebrew shop that was doing this experiment where they were asking people to sample two different beers. One was an extract brew and one was an all grain brew, and they were very similar recipes. And they were just trying to determine how many people could actually tell the difference, and then which one people preferred. And in this case, only 56% of the attendees actually guessed right. whether which one was all grain and which one was extract. But 56% also voted for the extract beer as being the superior beer. So I think that was a really great example of like, don't be afraid to use extracts. You know, it'll save you time and you can make just as good a beer. So I'm a big proponent of using extracts. I mean, my time's short as well. So I've been brewing with extracts a lot more frequently these days.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of that and also doing a lot more Brunabag just because I can do it a lot of times inside. The cleanup's faster. Everything's a little bit faster, you know.
Right, exactly. So, you know, be thinking about what you can do to save time and keep up your brewing because your local homebrew shop will love you for it.
Yeah, I don't think you need to spend 5 or 6 or 7 hours doing an all-grain batch all the time. If you think about it a little bit and use the right techniques, you can cut it down to 3 to 3.5 hours, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And that brings us to the next question. After years of seeing, 20%+ growth, we're now starting to see things level off a little bit in the industry. What do you think's driving that?
Well, I think there's a couple of factors that are going on there. It's true. Like for years, we were seeing double-digit growth at homebrew supply shops. So, I mean, we survey homebrew supply shops and get revenue figures to kind of track what's going on within homebrewing. And so with that, those revenue figures, you kind of see how things are trending. And the previous year, you see things really leveling off down to single-digit growth overall. And then this past year in 2015, a survey we're just wrapping up now, we actually saw overall slightly negative in terms of change in revenue year to year. I think there's a number of factors there. Certainly we've seen a lot of growth in the number of homebrew shops opening up. So increased competition has an effect on that.
Still even now there's a lot of new homebrew shops still opening up.
We are still seeing new homebrew shops opening up, but this past year we've also seen a lot more close than we've seen in previous years. I think we had around 50 shops close across the country in 2015, so that's high. But you know, given what we've been seeing with revenues dropping for a lot of shops, and it's not terribly surprising. So I think we'll probably see a leveling out to where it's a little bit more sustainable. But also mentioning that trend towards all grain and people brewing less frequently, that's certainly having an impact at retail as well. So for the homebrew supply shop owner, if their average customer is brewing less frequently, that's really going to cut into their revenue unless they're seeing a lot of new people getting into the hobby.
And I believe we actually still are seeing a lot of beginner kits sold, right? I mean, there are still a lot of people entering the hobby, right?
Yeah, for certain. And we're definitely seeing growing beginner kit sales, although growing at a much slower pace than we were seeing back when we were seeing double digit growth. But it's also a more difficult parameter to use now that, as I mentioned, people bypassing extract brewing, maybe not using a traditional 5-gallon brew kit. If they're going to do 1-gallon batches or brew in a bag, you really don't need all the equipment that's included in one of those beginner kits. So you can kind of cobble together that equipment without actually going to a store and purchasing it as a beginner kit.
So Gary, we're seeing a transition also from a lot of local homebrew stores to more online sales, and that's certainly affecting the market as well, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there is. We are seeing somewhat of a shift, but I would say with the last results, we're seeing even at the online retail level, we're seeing a decline. So while the growth or slowdown or decline at the retail level has been hardest hitting the more established brick and mortar stores that are primarily just walk-in business. And particularly those that have been open for 5 or more years, it really is seeming to be kind of across the board that it's not just a shift from those brick and mortar stores to the online retailers. It's happening across all segments.
Interesting. I know for a number of years we saw stronger growth in the online segment than in some of the local homebrew shops. But now you're seeing changes across the board, huh?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, that was certainly something we were concerned about and looking at closely and thinking like that's the way things were going. But it does seem to be that it's kind of across the board. And when we survey homebrewers themselves, like we find that homebrewers aren't necessarily just shopping online or shopping local. They're doing both, and so they're on average shopping at two different local stores and a couple of different online retailers as well in any given year. But primarily with the shopping local is what we see on average from homebrewer behavior.
Now, this isn't the first time this has happened, though. From what I recall, we had a slowdown around 2000, didn't we?
Yeah. Actually, starting in the late 90s, definitely a significant slowdown in the hobby. And so, those businesses have been around for a while. They know these things happen. Like in any given business, you're going to see cycles. So not particularly surprising. I think some of the factors involved this time around are a little different. And that rapid growth that we'd seen was not something we'd seen before. And I think a lot of people got into opening new stores, and probably a little bit of saturation within the market, and too many stores and too close proximity. And so we're starting to see just a little bit of a shakeout there. But I think that'll level off. And as I said, I mean, I think we're still seeing an increase in the number of people getting into the hobby. But if they're not brewing as frequently, that's going to impact the retailers in a way that might not impact American Homebrewers Association membership or Homebrew Club membership, or just the appearance of the popularity of the hobby.
Now, AHA membership has also grown tremendously in just the last few years. What kind of growth are you seeing now, and how is the AHA doing as a whole?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of growth. Back when I took over as director in 2005, we had around 9,000 members. We're now up over 46,000. We are starting to see a little bit of a slowdown, so we're not growing at double digits anymore, but we are still continuing to grow.
And what about the homebrew clubs? Are they still doing well?
It varies from club to club, but yeah, generally I think we're still seeing a strong interest in homebrew clubs. I've heard from clubs that are continuing to grow, others that are stabilized or even declining. So it's kind of a mixed bag there. I think there is maybe a little bit of less of a tendency for millennials to be joining clubs, so that might be a factor going forward.
Interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that, because I do speak at some of the local clubs and stuff, and pretty big turnout really usually most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And
a wide variety of ages and backgrounds too.
Right. I mean, if there were no millennials getting into clubs, there probably wouldn't be too many clubs anymore. So, like I said, they're the biggest segment of the hobby now. So. I think that's something going forward the club leadership really needs to be thinking about, that if they're to be around for the long term, getting young people involved in the clubs and into leadership positions is going to be critical.
Now, Gary, do you want to mention anything else about the survey before I go on? I know you said you were just closing out the one from this year.
I don't think I really have too much more on that, other than just, it will continue to track what's going on at retail and use those numbers to do what we can to be promoting the hobby. And
yeah, I think it'll pick up. It's just, it's the natural course of things. Not everything grows forever,
Yeah. But I mean, we do collect a lot of data and being a national organization, I guess that's something I would bring up, is without the AHA, there wouldn't be anybody to do these surveys and then to provide that information back to the retailers to help them do better business. The better businesses that those homebrew shops are, the better they can service the individual homebrewer.
Yep, and I'm a big advocate of supporting your local homebrew shop as much as you can, obviously.
As am I. Yeah, absolutely. It's really critical for people getting into the hobby. If you don't have that local support, it makes it a lot harder to get through this hobby. And takes time to ship stuff. So if you need yeast today, there's only one way to get it.
Yeah. Well, Gary, I want to switch gears for a minute and talk for a minute about the AHA. And can you start with what the AHA does as a national organization?
Well, it's as a national organization, some of the things that we do, as I kind of mentioned, we're able to promote the hobby and help new homebrewers get started. We've got a ton of information that's available free to anybody on homebrewersassociation.org.
Yeah, I'll put that up right now. Yeah.
And what we want to do is encourage everybody to encourage people to get into the hobby, but also to succeed within the hobby and grow within it. So we've got just a ton of information and recipes and things that are on our website that will help people not only get started, but to advance within the hobby. And then we advocate on behalf of homebrewers at both the federal and state level. On homebrew legislation, whether that be protecting homebrewers from legislation that is not pro homebrewer or getting new bills passed to enhance what homebrewers can do.
Well, of course, about a year and a half ago, you finally got it legalized everywhere in the United States, right? There's still two holdouts, I believe.
In 2013, the last two states, Mississippi and Alabama, passed legislation to legalize homebrewing. So now it is legal in all 50 states. Though with the way that alcohol law in this country is set up, each state regulates has its own set of regulations for alcohol, and so what homebrewers can and can't do legally within a state is going to vary from state to state.
Yeah. And maybe you could just outline a couple of those pitfalls. I think a lot of people aren't aware of some of the things you can run into, particularly with serving alcohol, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that we're seeing more and more frequently these days is homebrew being served at beer festivals. And in almost every state in the country, that is illegal. You can't serve homebrew to the public, and particularly if there's an entry fee to get in, that would be considered a sale of alcohol. And by definition, homebrew is not saleable. So that's something that we're running into in several states. There are really only a few states that specifically have legalized homebrew at serving homebrew at beer festivals. A couple of those would be like Minnesota, Missouri, and California.
Can you tell us some of the other things that AHA does? I know AHA does a lot of different things for brewers in addition to the things you mentioned.
Right. A big part of what we do is promote homebrewing to the media. So every year we actually generate hundreds of media stories on homebrewing, and it's just one way that we can go about promoting the hobby and getting more people into the hobby. We also offer a homebrew club insurance program that we introduced a couple of years back that offers a very affordable option for homebrew clubs to get insurance to cover their officers. So that's something we do we don't see any financial benefit from that, but it was something that we noticed with homebrew clubs. It was very hard to get liability insurance. And so we had an opportunity and we created a program that works for all the AHA registered homebrew clubs out there.
And from a brewer's perspective, what does somebody get if they sign up and become a member?
Benefits of the membership. Our primary benefit is Zymergy Magazine. It's definitely our most popular membership benefit.
On the left side there, for those of you watching the video, yeah.
Right. So that's our bi-monthly magazine. We also included with membership is access to our online Zymergy magazine as well as the Zymergy app. And both of those offer access to the magazine, not just the current magazine, but all of the magazines going back to the January, Jan-Feb 2000 issue. So 16 years worth of Zymergy magazine is instantly accessible. The the minute you join the American
Brewers. Probably thousands of articles, I would think, over the years.
Right. Yeah, just a huge amount of information, and it's very easily searchable as well, so you can find exactly what you're looking for. All the recipes that have been included in the magazine for over a decade. So, great resource. We also offer our AHA member deals program. That has over 1,300 businesses across the United States, even a couple in Canada, that offer discounts to members of the American Home Brewers Association. So, and most of these are our breweries that are members of the Brewers Association. So you get discounts on beer and food or merchandise through this program. It's a very popular program, and it's one we continue to grow. So just in the past month, we added 30 additional locations and expect to have at least another 300 before the end of the year.
And you also host a lot of competitions and events, right?
Right. So we host the National Homebrew Competition, which is the world's largest beer competition, and that's underway right now. We have over 8,000 entries in the competition this year. First round is being judged at 12 different regional judge centers, with the winners from the 31 categories in each of those 12 judge centers going on to the final round, which will be taking place at HomebrewCon. And then we jointly sanction competitions with the Beer Judge Certification Program. So, you know, there's I think over 500 competitions being registered per year these days.
Yep. And I should mention the calendar. You have a calendar that actually lists every single event, I think, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, on homebrewersassociation.org, you can find that calendar of events and
right there,
and see exactly what's going on in terms of AHA events and homebrew competitions.
All kinds of stuff. Fantastic. I wanted to ask about some of the larger events that you host. We'll talk about HomebrewCon in just a minute, but can you talk a little bit about some of the regional events and that you do?
Sure. We do what we call AHA rallies, and these are exclusive access for members of the American Homebrewers Association. But we do offer a discounted membership for those who sign up at the door for AHA rallies. And what these are, it's kind of like a party for the local homebrewing community. They're hosted by local Brewers Association member breweries that open their doors to the homebrewing community, and you get VIP access to tours of the brewery, and you see free samples of the beers, and frequently they have food available. But it's an awesome opportunity for homebrewers to gather at a local brewery and kind of get this VIP treatment. So they're a whole lot of fun. I was just at one at Left Hand Brewing Company last weekend. Mm-hmm. It was a great time. Got a couple coming up on April 16th. We've got one at Fish Brewing Company in Washington and Raleigh Brewing Company in North Carolina.
Awesome. And then, of course, the big event every year is the HomebrewCon, right?
Right. So HomebrewCon is the National Homebrewers Conference. We're in our 38th year for this year, and we'll be in Baltimore. So downtown in the Inner Harbor of Baltimore, which is a beautiful part of the city, right next to the water. It's going to be an awesome time. I'm so excited to be back in Baltimore.
I'm definitely looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. I noticed you renamed it this year. Yeah. It used to be called the National Homebrew Conference. Now seems to be where everybody's using the label HomebrewCon. Is that to appeal to the Dungeons and Dragons crowd or DairyCon, you know, Comic-Con?
No, not specifically. It's still the National Homebrewers Conference, but you know, we've had different names for each year's event, and we decided that we wanted to keep that consistent. And went with HomebrewCon mainly because the term conference can sound really boring or stuffy.
Yeah, it does, really.
And so I think that it doesn't do the event justice in terms of just how fun an event this is.
It's not really boring, though.
It's not boring at all. And in fact, if you attend this conference and you say you were bored, you must have slept through it, because there's nothing else like it.
Or passed out. That occasionally happens too.
Not as frequently as you might think.
No, we've been pretty lucky.
We tend to have pretty responsible drinkers amongst this crowd. But anytime you have an opportunity to gather with thousands of fellow homebrewers and enjoy, we have this year we have 63 different seminars planned on everything from, you know, the history of beer to ciders and mead and brewing techniques and different styles and just anything you can imagine. There's going to be some coverage of it.
And you get some of the top people to come in, which is fantastic.
Right, right. I mean, the opportunity to rub elbows with someone like Randy Mosier or John Palmer. And these are these people are homebrewers just like the rest of us and totally approachable. So,
and the pro brewers are there too.
Right, right. I mean, we're going to have a great contingent of pro brewers, as not only as part of our speakers, but also the first night of the event, we've got our craft beer kickoff party, which will feature a lot of the local breweries in the Baltimore DC area, serving up their beers. So it's a great opportunity to meet with those brewers and taste their beers. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, can you share with us some of the highlights? You mentioned a few of them, but we've got, you know, Homebrewer Night, the speakers, the National Homebrew Awards, there's so many things going on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so much going on. I mentioned the seminars. We also have our keynote speaker for this year is Sam Calagione, the founder of Dogfish Head Brewery. And he's going to, you know, not only have the keynote address, but we'll have a welcome toast. And he's got a beer that he's bringing that's going to pair nicely with what he's talking about. So very excited about that. And, you know, we have, of course the highlight of the event is club night, on Friday night of the conference.
It's kind of hard to beat club night, really.
Yeah, it's hard to beat and it's really hard to explain. So, you know, I recommend going on, if you go to the homebrewcon.org website, we have a video that kind of takes you through what the conference is all about. And that might help explain what club night is, but essentially it's kind of like a beer festival, but instead of breweries, the booths are manned by homebrew clubs. But it's a lot more elaborate than what you would get with your average beer festival. Those clubs are going all out to impress their fellow homebrewers. They decorate their booths, you know, based on what their club themes and come dressed in costume, and they bring some of their best homebrew. So I mean, there's nowhere else where you're going to find a more diverse selection of beers than this event, where we have 80 plus different homebrew clubs serving up their most unique beers.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them have 20 or more beers too.
Right, right. I mean, and it really gets to the heart of what homebrewing is all about, which is, you know, brewing whatever you want and pushing the envelope and doing new things. And so, you know, every year I'm just blown away by something new that I find at club night, and you know, some new beer or ingredients used in a beer that I've never even thought of, that sounds like a total train wreck, but actually works. Like maybe Denny Kahn and Drew Beecham's clam chowder saison probably fit that.
That was pretty good. I had some of that last year.
It was pretty good.
Surprisingly.
Exactly. Who would have thought, but yeah, it actually worked.
Yeah. The neat thing about Homebrewers Night is people can do things that just aren't even remotely commercially viable and make it fun, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, where can you learn a little bit more about Homebrewers, HomebrewCon and, also to register?
Well, HomebrewCon, should probably mention the dates, June 9th through the 11th. It's at the Inner Harbor in Baltimore, hosted at the Baltimore Convention Center. The website is homebrewcon.org. You can also
get it is right there.
Yeah. Our main website, homebrewersassociation.org. But yeah, there's tons of information up there. I highly recommend checking it out. Ticket sales are going briskly, and we do have a early registration deadline of April 12th. So after April 12th, the ticket prices do go up. So if you're thinking about going, I would certainly recommend registering before then.
It's been a couple of years since we've had it on the East Coast too. So
2013. So it's probably going to be a while before we come back too. So take this opportunity to get out there and experience not only the conference, but the Inner Harbor of Baltimore, which is just a really cool place.
And you might want to talk about the tickets, because some people may only want to come for the social, you know, come for Homebrewers Night or come for some of the social events.
Right. So we do have a couple of different packages available. We do our full conference that covers everything. The grand banquet and award ceremony for the National Homebrew Competition is an add-on, and that's a beer paired dinner that's prepared by Brewers Association Executive Chef Adam Dooley. But there's also a social package that goes along with whereas the full conference gets you into everything, the social package doesn't include all of the seminars. So if you're bringing a spouse or a significant other, or just somebody who's interested in checking out the conference, but not necessarily wanting to take part in all of the educational seminars, you can still do that.
Or maybe you just want to come out for the weekend, you know, and just enjoy Homebrewers Night Friday or something like that.
Right. Yeah. We don't sell individual tickets for individual days, but we do have that social package, which would get you into much of the conference without the cost of the full conference package.
And I'm going to be there as well. We're going to have a Beersmith booth again. Maybe talk a little bit about the show floor.
Yeah, actually, thank you. I forgot to mention, like, we have our Homebrew Expo is a part of the conference every year, and we're expecting to have somewhere around 100 different exhibitors for this year's conference. And you know, when I started going to the first conference I attended was actually in 2000, and back in those days there was maybe like 3 or 4 different exhibitors, and now we've got over 100. It's just unbelievable, and the gadgetry and the new ingredients, and you know, we get a lot of breweries that actually participate as exhibitors. So it's really an extraordinary event. And then throughout the conference and in the exhibit hall, we have homebrew clubs that are serving their beers in the what we call the social club. So you know, always chances to sample homebrews throughout the conference while checking out.
Yeah, the social club goes all day too, right?
Uh-huh. And getting an education. And then also for members, we do record all of the seminars that we have at the conference. And those are available via members only area on homebrewersassociation.org. So even if you're not able to get to the conference, if you're a member, you still have access to those seminars.
Nice, Gary. Was there anything else you want to add about the Homebrew Conference?
Well, you know, I'm not anticipating a sellout, but we did have a very brisk start to the registration. We've already got over 2,000 people registered. We have a total capacity of about 4,000. The banquet is filling up very quickly and probably will sell out here shortly. But there is that possibility that the conference will sell out. So if you are interested in attending, I would definitely check it out on the sooner side.
So there it is, homebrewcon.org. And of course, your main webpage, if you want to mention it.
Homebrewersassociation.org.
So Gary, how does the American Homebrewers Association relate to the Brewers Association? How does that fit in?
So the American Homebrewers Association is a division of the Brewers Association, which is a larger organization and mm-hmm. encompasses primarily small independent breweries. I guess I'll start with a very brief history lesson. So everything got started back in 1978 with Charlie Papazian and this guy named Charlie Mattson that founded the American Homebrewers Association. Within a few years after that founding, they had this great idea to launch a beer festival called the Great American Beer Festival, modeled after the Great British Beer Festival. At the time, there weren't any festivals like this where you brought together lots of different breweries in the same place. So, but that was something that was started by homebrewers. And then shortly thereafter, the AHA started incorporating content for small breweries into the National Homebrewers Conference, mm-hmm. and then eventually split into two different divisions. We had back then it was called the Institute for Brewing Studies and then the AHA. And then, so then we, at that point we created this parent organization, which eventually became the Brewers Association. So now there are over 4,000 breweries in the United States. And so the majority of those are members of the Brewers Association. So our BA Professional Division, along with our events department, which runs the Great American Beer Festival and the Craft Brewers Conference and our Savor event, as well as Homebrew Con, those are really the major financial drivers for the Brewers Association. For the American Homebrewers Association, being a part of that larger organization is very much advantageous to the association and the members, because it gives us access to a bigger staff than we would have. Like, we have amazingly talented people at the Brewers Association in our marketing mm-hmm. department and graphics department and web department that we just wouldn't have if we weren't part of this part of the Brewers Association. But it also really helps strengthen the ties between the homebrewing community and the craft breweries in the United States. The American Homebrewers Association makes up the core of the Brewers Association's Support Your Local Brewery Network. So we have this network that we use whenever the craft breweries in this country are threatened with legislation, or they're trying to pass something to allow them to do things like sell growlers, for example. We can send messages out to AHA members and activate them to contact their legislators. And the AHA is really the core of that program. And we've seen it time and again where that reaching out to the local homebrewing community was what made the difference in passing some legislation that would that supports the local breweries. So it's very much advantageous on both sides to have the homebrewers as part of this larger craft brewing organization.
And I know from going to HomebrewCon that a lot of the professional brewers started as homebrewers.
Absolutely. Just about all of them got started as homebrewers. Certainly the largest out there, like Sam Adams and New Belgium and Sierra Nevada, they all started as homebrewers. So, and that continues to be the case, where the majority of people who are starting breweries got started as homebrewers. And certainly the majority of people who work as brewers for those breweries got started as homebrewers. So having a vibrant homebrewing community is most definitely in the best interest of the brewers. Brewing community as a whole, and if you think about it, with those 4,000 different breweries and in the United States today, we have a more diverse selection of beers available than anywhere, and that's a direct reflection of our homebrewing community, because it's the homebrewers that are that are pushing the envelope in terms of what beer can be, what ingredients can be used in beers, what techniques you can use, reviving extinct styles. You wouldn't have that without the homebrewing community that we have today. So I mean, that's absolutely what's driving that growth in craft brewing we're seeing in the country now.
And Gary, is there anything else you'd like to add regarding the Brewers Association, American Homebrewers Association?
I just want to say that this is a great time to be a homebrewer. In fact, there's never been a better time to be a homebrewer. That access to information through say the homebrewersassociation.org site, or through your podcast, those things didn't exist before. And so that plus the quality of ingredients that are available. And just the community of homebrewers that is out there today make this the best time ever to be a homebrewer. And so certainly for I think everybody out there you should definitely take pride in what you do. It's unique, and it's changing the way beer is made and drank in this country. So it's a really awesome time to be a homebrewer.
Pretty amazing to me too, the level of knowledge that we have. I started brewing in 87, and it was really a black art back then.
Oh yeah.
And now it's just I have people writing me asking me about the fine art details of adjusting their mash pH and stuff. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, for sure. And I was just talking to one of our local crafters here in Boulder yesterday, and he was commenting on the what happens when you've got some homebrewers on a brewery tour, and how the beer IQ just goes up dramatically, and they start asking questions about pH and things like that. So, that's stuff that the average brewer doesn't know. And just, a decade ago, most homebrewers wouldn't even be thinking about those kinds of things. So yeah, the brewing knowledge that homebrewers have today, even homebrewers that had just recently started, is so vastly far beyond what it was, a couple of decades ago.
So, Gary, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a busy guy.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
It's awesome having you again. Gary Glass, he's the director of the American Homebrewers Association. Gary leads a 40,000 plus member national organization representing U.S. homebrewers. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Gary Glass for joining me today. If you're ready for the homebrewing experience of a lifetime, I'll be teaching a few seminars at the Craft Beer and Brewing Brewers Retreat at Devil's Thump Ranch in Colorado this fall. I hope you'll be able to join me. Craft Beer and Brewing is now offering two stunning brewing retreats. Check out all of the amazing retreats at brewersretreat.com. Again, that's brewersretreat.com. And also Anvil, the new line of brewing equipment from Blickman Engineering. Kettles, burners, and accessories that are built to last. Get durable, reliable, high-quality brewing equipment with Anvil at anvilbrewing.com. Again, that's anvilbrewing.com. And finally, Beersmith Mobile. Edit your recipes on the go for the iPhone, Android, or Kindle Fire device. You can find out more about Beersmith Mobile at beersmith.com/mobile. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.